Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Reassurance is knowing our pensions will be supporting you in the years ahead. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension today.
Just as we speak at the moment, the Taoiseach is speaking to the Ireland-Ukraine Economic Forum in Ivy House, the headquarters of the Department of Foreign Affairs, and Stephen's Green, President Zelensky, there as his next engagement, of course, after his speech to the Joint Houses of the Oireachtas in Leinster House. It was a speech that covered a lot of ground. He began, of course, by thanking Ireland.
Deputies and senators, dear friends, dear Ireland, thank you for your attention to Ukraine and for the fact that Ireland has truly stood the test of time. Thank you for providing home and protection to our people when they needed it most once the war broke out back home. While in some societies the fatigue from news about the war is growing, we do not feel that your voice, the voice of Ireland, is turning quieter. Thank you.
And he also spoke over the course of that speech about working towards a situation where Ukraine wouldn't just have the absence of war. He wanted a long-term just peace and also Russia being brought to account, specifically progress on a tribunal to investigate Russia.
As long as war and occupation and the propaganda of hatred continue, all the pressure on Russia must remain in place so that Russia does not believe it will be rewarded for this war with stolen Ukrainian land or kidnapped Ukrainian children. Please continue supporting all efforts to make the tribunal for Russia's aggression a reality so that one day it truly begins its work and so that Russian killers cannot freely travel the world as if they have done nothing wrong.
And on that, on sanctions and on providing funds for the reconstruction of Ukraine, President Zelensky said there would be no good future for Europe without unity and that also that Europe couldn't run away from his values. But here's how he concluded.
This has gone on far too long to simply close our eyes and turn the page on Russia. Without a just peace, hatred will not fade. It will continue to smolder and provoke new violence. History has seen this before, and this time it must be different. We need real peace. Help us achieve it and never lose your faith in Ukraine. Thank you, Ireland. Glory to Ukraine. Thank you.
And concluding there with a round of applause. Indeed, there was a standing ovation to greet him there. And President Zelensky is speaking to that Ireland-Ukraine Economic Forum in Ivy House as we speak. But for now, we're joined by Sandra Hurley, our own political reporter. Sandra, the speech, as we could hear there from the applause, went down well with the members of the Oireachtas and a strong speech.
Yes, absolutely. A 15-minute speech. And I think it was interesting to see what he was saying that was different to what he said back in 2022, even though this speech, of course, is in person rather than via video link. And of course, he thanked Ireland, as your first clip illustrated there. But I think imbued in that there was an entreaty to stick with us and a sort of a realisation that the war is grinding on. This is going on for nearly 4 years, and an appeal really to stay the course and an appeal to the Irish government. But more broadly, I think to all the Irish people who have supported Ukraine in this war. Also, I think a big emphasis on accountability. He said things like the Russian aggressors cannot travel the world as if they have done nothing. He said the aggressor must be held accountable for what was done. Russia cannot walk away at the end of this and for there to be no accountability. But I think he was hopeful as well. He did say at one stage that peace is closer than ever. And what's remarkable about his visit to Ireland this week is that even though it's been in the works for a long time, it is coming at this critical pivotal week where there is a peace plan on the table. It was a plan that initially was very much in favour of Russia. Ukraine was excluded from the talks, but it does seem that he did give hints today at the press conference earlier at government buildings that it is moving towards something that is better for Ukraine. I don't think anybody thinks that they are there yet, but certainly this Irish visit is happening at a time when all those broader talks are going on and that big focus on the Kremlin today. He got a rapturous reception in Leinster House, a standing ovation, all TDs trying to shake his hand as he left. He met all party leaders on his way in as well. Unusually, there wasn't speeches from, usually at an event like this, you'll have speeches from all the party leaders and maybe the leaders of the individual political groupings. That didn't happen today. We had brief remarks at the beginning from the Ceann Comhairle, Verona Murphy, and concluding remarks from the Chéile of the Shannon, Mark Daly. And I think that's just the fact is that President Zelensky's schedule is so tight. We know that this whole trip to Ireland is concluding in just 24 hours.
Okay, and do we know what he does next? As I say, he's in Ivy House at the moment, being interviewed by Áine Kerr in front of an audience there for the Ireland-Ukraine Economic Forum. What else will he be doing? Is it pretty much from there to the airport?
He is meeting Ukrainians in Ireland. This is a private event. It's not being announced where exactly this is, but certainly I think there was an intent to acknowledge the contribution of Ukrainians who have stayed in Ireland. Of the 120,000 who have passed through Ireland over the past nearly 4 years, more than 80,000 are still in Ireland. And it was important that individual Ukrainians did get to meet their president and make that connection, because, of course, there are broader questions about what happens if the war ends, what happens to the temporary protection directive, what happens to Ukrainians in Ireland. Do they still get to enjoy those benefits that have allowed them to move to Ireland, to live and work in Ireland and get extra supports? The Taoiseach Micheál Martin was asked about that at today's press conference at government buildings, and he didn't give a firm answer, as you wouldn't expect him to. He said that the government would work with the community in Ireland, but that is something that's very tricky and that's coming down the line. Something else I think the Taoiseach tried to gloss over at that press conference was what we've seen in recent months going on for some time, that paring back of benefits for Ukrainians. Just in the past month, we saw a proposal go to cabinet to reduce the amount of time that Ukrainians can stay in state-provided accommodation. There are other proposals being discussed at a high level in government. They haven't all gone to cabinet yet, but those benefits are being pared back all the time. There was a direct question put to both President Zelensky and Taoiseach Micheál Martin today. Neither of them really wanted to get stuck into that question. Today, I think, was a day for stressing the positives on the relationship between Ireland and Ukraine. But Taoiseach Micheál Martin stressed all the things that Ireland has done for Ukraine. President Zelensky said he didn't want to criticise because there had been so much good done.
And emphasising that, of course, he looks forward to welcoming Ukrainians home when there is, as he said, a just peace at some point, undefined in the future. Sandra, thanks very much for that. Sandra Hurley, RT political reporter, joining us there. Now, we're also joined on the line by Aidy Roach, voluntary CEO of Chernobyl Children International. Aidy, good evening to you.
Good evening, Colm. I've been listening to some of your reports there, which were outstanding. And as someone who was there in the audience, I was standing side by side with many of the Irish-Ukrainian support groups that have been working tirelessly, the unsung heroes and heroines since the outbreak of war.
And what was the atmosphere like there, Aidy?
It was somber, very dignified and very deeply moving. I saw many people in tears. On one side of me, I had a woman whose son died on the front line. He was born and reared in Ireland. He was 18 when he went on the front line. He disappeared on the front line 2 years ago, and his body has only just been returned to her a couple of weeks ago when they were able to match the DNA. And she was there with tears running down her face as her beautiful son had been lost in the fog of war. And, you know, so it was very moving on one hand, but also I felt the tone was set by our Ceann Comhairle, Vera Murphy. Verona Murphy, I beg your pardon. Very thoughtful, supportive, citing the parallels with Irish history where we've had occupation, invasion. And also she spoke thoughtfully about Irish neutrality and how we have such diplomatic and negotiating skills. And she finally said, which was very interesting and true, of course, that all wars end in negotiations. And, you know, the president himself spoke very clearly that there will be no peace without justice or justice without peace, that they do not want to be humiliated. And he appealed to Ireland, you know, to support in that capacity.
Can I ask you just, Aidy, I mean, a just peace is what President Zelensky and indeed the Taoiseach Micheál Martin said they wanted in their remarks today. But from the humanitarian humanitarian point of view and access to the most vulnerable people in Ukraine in the fields that you're working in, I suppose, how impeded has that been for the war, by the war, should I say, and how hard has it been to keep the effort going in supporting the families you deal with?
I suppose, Colm, in a way, we were kind of in a unique position in Ukraine because we've been there solidly on the ground since 1986, since the Chernobyl tragedy happened. So we kind of had four decades of, you know, building up infrastructure, support systems. Like, we were based in Kharkiv. Unfortunately, we've had to leave because
of the war. For anyone who doesn't know, that's just right up in the northeast,
right,
only kilometres
the
from the Russian border. Yeah,
exactly. And we've been sending in, like, for decades, you know, surgical pediatric teams carrying out life-saving surgeries, like sending humanitarian aid, etc. So in a way, when the outbreak of war happened at that time in 2022, on the 24th of February, we actually were able to kind of kickstart and just escalate our work. And we have very good partners in Ukraine. So we've been working kind of, you know, in giving unique support, you know, throughout the 4 years of the war. And, like, we're so grateful that Ireland has opened not only our hearts, but our homes and our purse strings. Like, none of us expected the war to drag out for, like, all of these years later. So, and in a sense, Ireland were on the front line of first responders, if you like. And there we remain, and we will be with the Ukrainian people until we get that lasting, just and fair peace.
Okay. Adi Roach, thanks very much for that. Voluntary CEO of Chernobyl Children International. Thanks very much for joining us this evening.
Now, all of this comes as President Donald Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, is in Moscow ahead of talks with President Putin on the draft peace plan. From Washington now, I'm joined by Simon Marks, chief correspondent with Feature Story News. Simon, we heard the President Zelensky here today asked about that meeting in Moscow. He said that he had spoken with Steve Witkoff and his team yesterday. He said he wasn't ready to share all of the points of the plan just yet, but that he was waiting to hear the results of today's meeting. What are you hearing about that meeting in Washington?
Well, it's a real split-screen moment, this, Katie, between President Zelensky's visit there to Ireland and the events that are underway right now inside the Kremlin. We believe that Steve Witkoff, the president's special envoy, and the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, are with Vladimir Putin. At the end of a day that has seen the Russian leader engaged in an enormous amount of projection of strength regarding his own economy. Indeed, he kept Mr. Witkoff and Mr. Kushner waiting several hours while Vladimir Putin was addressing an investment forum, making the point that the Russian economy is still successfully coping with what he described as external pressures, that Russia is open to cooperation with foreign businesses. Mr. Witkoff and Mr. Kushner got treated to lunch at a Michelin star restaurant by one of the Kremlin's intermediaries. Then they were seen walking through Red Square past the famous Russian department store GUM that lines Red Square. And they then walked into the Kremlin just as without any sort of security detail obviously present. They certainly weren't driven into the building. They just departed from the public walkway and made their way into the complex. Earlier in the day, President Putin was once again trying to stoke divisions between the United States position and the European position on the future of Ukraine. He said that Europe has been putting forward proposals for a peace plan that are unacceptable to Russia. He said Russia has no intention of going to war with European countries, but if Europe starts a war, Russia is ready right now. And those very pugnacious statements made during his speech to that investment forum, I think, set the stage for what could be some very difficult talks that are taking place now in Moscow.
Yes, President Zelensky was asked about the detail of this plan as well when speaking after meeting Emmanuel Macron in France yesterday. He said the plan now looks better. Is there any more information circulating about this, what started as a 28-point plan that was seen as a Moscow wish list, what it might now resemble, Simon?
Well, it's now reportedly a 19-point plan, and that is after Secretary of State Marco Rubio spent the past 10 days essentially massaging it and getting it less to reflect Moscow's interests. And as he said on Sunday, after meetings with Ukrainian officials, more focused on the delivery of a permanent peace for Ukraine that also scaffolds Ukraine's economic prosperity. I mean, we know that there are bitter pills contained in the original plan for Ukraine to swallow, including vast constraints on the size of the army that Ukraine, from a Russian perspective, would be allowed to continue maintaining, and also commitments for Ukraine never to join NATO. Those are issues that President Zelensky has pushed steadfastly back against. But there's also now a growing pressure point between the United States and Europe over the proposals that are being discussed, because President Trump, according to reporting in the Wall Street Journal last week, has a plan that has been presented to him by Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff that would see trade between the United States and Russia normalized, and the $300 billion in frozen Russian assets used primarily to finance joint US-Russian investment opportunities in Moscow. And that's something that Europe completely opposes. They want that $300 billion used for the reconstruction of Ukraine.
Indeed.
So there are all sorts of areas where this could fall apart.
Indeed, and that came up in the speech and in the press conference here today as well, after that meeting with Micheál Martin. But for now, from Washington, many thanks, Simon Marks there, Chief Correspondent with Feature Story News.
Now, coming up, we go inside Unpost's mail centre, a staff race to keep up with Christmas deliveries, and why 128 frontline Gardaí will have taser guns before Christmas. Now, we're going to go back to the visit of President Zelensky, and there's been a statement released by People Before Profit saying they stand with the people of Ukraine against Putin's invasion, but will not applaud the agenda of militarization which is being pushed across Europe. And People Before Profit have confirmed that both TDs Paul Murphy and Richard Boyd Barrett stood but didn't applaud at the end of President Zelensky's speech to the Oireachtas. We're joined by one of them now, Richard Boyd Barrett. Richard, good evening to you.
Good evening.
I didn't see you in the greeting line when President Zelensky arrived in Leinster House. Were you in it?
No.
And you decided not to applaud the speech by President Zelensky when he concluded in the Oireachtas. Why not?
I mean, we stood out of respect for the Ukrainian people, and we attended because we are very sympathetic to the plight of a people that have been invaded in a brutal, and it is, and we said from the beginning, it was a brutal, unjustified invasion by Putin of Ukraine. But we have always, and we remain very consistent in this, opposed the idea that military escalation or alignment with NATO was going to improve the situation.
Right. Do you believe the Ukrainians are entitled to resist by force of arms an invasion of their sovereign territory?
I believe exactly the same as with Palestinians. The Palestinians have the right to resist, and so do Ukrainians.
Sure. Which is consistent.
Hold on a second. If you're going to interrupt me, I'm clarifying on behalf of the benefit of listeners
yeah. that is consistent with the laws of war, where people's sovereign territory is invaded and occupied, they're entitled to resist by force of arms.
You didn't let me finish the sentence. Would you let me finish my sentence?
Sure, fire away.
Okay, so what while I believe that an occupied people, whether they're in Palestine or whether they're in Ukraine, have the right to resist, that doesn't mean I advocate a military solution to either. In both cases, because I'm consistent, I'm for an unconditional ceasefire and for trying to resolve the thing through non-military means. And that is the argument that we have put forward from the beginning. And
okay.
I think if you look at the situation now, 3 years on, has the war achieved anything?
Okay,
no.
So it's been
a disaster.
Okay, so in the beginning, when Russia invaded Ukraine, should the Ukrainians have simply not resisted or offered some form of passive resistance rather than firing back at them?
I think that the idea that you could militarily win in the situation against what was an absolutely unjustified or brutal invasion was always not going to happen.
Okay.
If you look at the situation now, that is clearly the case.
Do you accept that Russia occupies less of Ukraine as a result of Ukraine having militarily resisted Russia?
That's not at all clear from what's actually being mooted in the deal that's going to being mooted. It's not at all clear. In fact, it is quite possible that Ukraine is going to end up in a worse position.
So when Russia invaded and attempted to take the capital city, Kyiv, and capture the president and take over Hostomel Airport, into which they would have flown aircraft and tried to take vast tracts of the country, and Ukraine pushed back against them in Kharkiv as well with considerable success, and in Zaporizhia and in Kherson. I'll ask you the same question again. Do you not think that had any effect on Russia's progress in occupying Ukrainian territory?
I do. I think the resistance of ordinary Ukrainians to an invasion, just as the same way as the resistance of the Palestinians, is entirely justified and, of course, would have some impact.
Because this is important.
Richard, hang on a second.
The Russians invaded in tanks. The Ukrainians were provided with Javelin missiles, which stopped those tanks. Do you not think that helped?
I do not believe that the military escalation and the alignment to NATO, or the calls that we've had for the last number of years of more weapons being poured in, more now and still hundred million coming from this country and more from Europe, is going to solve the situation, right? So I'm for a ceasefire, and we were for a ceasefire from the beginning, just as we are for a ceasefire in Palestine.
And how would Ukraine have achieved the most advantageous terms in order to secure a truce or ceasefire or a lasting peace on something that reflects what their aims are, rather than allowing Russia to advance as far as possible into the country and them having a weaker hand in the negotiations?
You see, I find it very strange that you are trying to corner me into saying that military resistance was the only way. But you wouldn't for a moment try and corner me into saying that the Palestinians should engage in military resistance against an occupation.
I'm actually asking you.
It's the double standards of this equation that really, to be honest, infuriates me. And it is at the heart of the attitude of NATO and the European Union, where we apply different rules in Ukraine to the ones that we apply in Palestine. And similarly, by the way, I mean, I'm for a united Ireland. I'm for the end of the British occupation of this island. That does not mean I advocate that we go back to a military campaign against the British presence. Okay. I think there are other ways to address the British occupation of the north of this country.
Okay, but do you accept that the reason that the island, a 26-county state, was born in the first place was through force of arms? Do you accept that 1916, and there was an imperial dimension to 1916 as well, Ireland got guns off the Germans to launch the 1916 Rising.
There was a very, very important anti-imperial, and the rebels of 1916 made a very, very clear decision not to align with the two big imperial blocks that were slaughtering each other.
So in the proclamation in 1916, who were our gallant allies in Europe that were read out in the proclamation? That was a reference to Germany.
Listen, the Spanish Civil War
was an interim period conflict as well.
And I can see you're advocating strongly.
I'm not advocating anything. I'm asking you about the consistency of your position.
James Connolly and Pádraig Pearse set up the Irish Neutrality League at the outset of the First World War. And they made it absolutely clear that they were not going to align with either of the belligerents in the slaughter that followed in the First World War.
Let's take it back to Ukraine then. Do you believe the Ukrainians should just stop fighting now?
I think there should be a ceasefire. Yes, a ceasefire. And
But do you think the Ukrainians should unilaterally stop fighting?
Anything.
But do you believe Ukraine should just unilaterally stop fighting?
I do not believe there has been a serious effort on either side to try and resolve this. Clearly, Putin is an imperialist aggressor. That is absolutely clear, right? Trying to consolidate spheres of influence. But it is equally clear that Europe and NATO are trying to consolidate spheres of influence in Eastern Europe.
Do you not think Ukraine has any agency in this?
Of course I think the people of Ukraine have, but I disagree with the alignment with NATO. And I disagree with the double standards that are being displayed by the European Union and by NATO.
But quite apart from an alignment with NATO, Ukraine, as a sovereign country that decides to resist invasion, do they not have any agency in this, or do you just see this as a prism through the prism of different global power blocks fighting each other in Ukraine, with Ukraine having no role in this or no input?
No, of course they have a role, but it is massively overlaid by inter-imperialist competition, and there's not a question about that. And to be honest, like, any serious analysis of what's happening in the world today would acknowledge that there is inter-imperialist rivalry going on between Russia, China, and the NATO bloc. And there's not a question about that. And for to be kind of suggested that that's not a legitimate perspective, I think, frankly, is failing to acknowledge the terrible history of inter-imperial conflicts in the 20th century.
But I suppose, what should sovereign countries do then when they are invaded? Should they simply put their hands up and say, we'll switch to a situation of passive resistance, or should they offer any resistance when they're invaded? And if somebody offers to help them in armed resistance, should they refuse that help?
I find it absolutely amazing that you sort of are trying to, again, push the agenda that we should endorse military resistance in one situation, Ukraine, but you don't ask the same situation. Why are you not asking the Irish government why they don't support escalating military resistance by the Palestinians against the Israeli occupation of their land? I don't know why, because you never asked that question. Well, you never asked that question.
Richard, your party put a statement out, and I'm asking you questions on foot of that statement.
Our statement is very, very clear, which is that we stood out of respect and attended out of respect. We absolutely condemn the Russian invasion. Putin should get out of Ukraine. Okay. But we do not support a military solution or involvement of NATO and the militarisation process in Europe as somehow a solution to the situation.
Okay, and thanks for joining us on that this evening. Richard Boyd-Barrett of People Before Profit. Coming up, popular baby names in 2026.